If you're looking for a way to help birds or take your support to the next level, this May, I would love for you to join the Birds Canada Birdathon. It's easy to participate in and helps raise thousands of dollars for bird conservation. Learn more at birdscanada.org/birdathon. Now let's get to the episode. You're listening to The Warblers, a Birds Canada podcast. I'm Andrea Gress. Join me and others as we travel on common flight paths with our guests, gaining insights and inspiration from the world of birds and bird conservation in Canada. Welcome back to another episode of The Warblers podcast. Today's topic is all about grasslands, but from the lens of an author. So it's kind of a different look at it. And we've got Jody Allaire joining for the interview as well. You've heard Jody on the podcast before. He's one of the producers of the podcast. And Jody, you're kind of excited about this episode, right? Because this is an author that you love, right?
Yes, absolutely. And thanks, Andrea. Really great to be back on the podcast. I am really excited to have Trevor Harriott on as a guest to the podcast. I'm a big fan of Trevor's work. I think he's a fantastic nature writer, one of Canada's finest nature writers, I would argue. And his books, you know, really speak to me for sure, and especially from the perspective of the Canadian prairies and, you know, and what the prairies mean to birds. And even though I didn't grow up out here on the prairies, I live here now, but I've always been enamored, you know, ever since, you know, I read Who Has Seen the Wind by W.O. Mitchell back in grade school. There's always been this sort of perception of this beautiful windswept landscape, you know, full of birds and full of sounds. The unfortunate reality is that it's really changing out here, and it's actually one of the most imperiled landscapes that we now have in Canada. And a lot of our birds our prairie birds are in very steep decline. It's one of the reasons it's such a work priority for Birds Canada and the work we're doing out here. But so Trevor packs all of this into beautifully written books, which is a real gift. So Trevor Harriott is a naturalist, grassland conservationist, and the author of several award-winning books, including one of my personal favorites, Grass Sky Song, and the national bestseller River in a Dry Land, both of which were shortlisted for the Governor General's Award for Nonfiction. He is a recipient of the Kloppenberg Award for Literary Merit and the Saskatchewan Order of Merit. Trevor and his wife Karen live in Regina and spend much of their time on a piece of aspen parkland prairie east of the city. His latest work, The Economy of Sparrows, is his eighth book, but first novel.
Yeah, and we'll be getting into The Economy of Sparrows a little bit with him, as well as just what drives Trevor's interest in grasslands. And I mean, you've touched on it a little bit there, just in that description of how wonderful these landscapes are and these birds are, but also how many threats and challenges these areas are facing. So this is a really, really interesting episode. I will warn listeners that we recorded this in March, so we were all excited about some of the really early spring migration stuff, and we kind of nerd out about birds a little bit. So keep that in mind when you're listening. I think by the time this episode comes out, we'll be really, really into migration, and you'll have been seeing birds for well over a month now in your regions. So without further ado, we'll dive on in. So welcome to the podcast, Trevor. We're really excited to have you on today. This is kind of a prairie-focused episode. We've got myself in Calgary with a Saskatchewan upbringing, Jody out there in Drumheller, and yourself. Could you start by telling us, whereabouts are you based?
I live in Regina, and we have a place out in the country east of Regina, south of the town of Indian Head, where we spend a lot of time in the Aspen Parkland. But yeah, I've lived most of my adult life in Regina. I was actually born in Edmonton, but then we quickly moved to Saskatchewan, where my parents are both from. So yeah, I'm dyed-in-the-wool prairie person.
Yeah, right down there in the grassland. So, I mean, I do have to ask, have you had any interesting bird observations lately?
Oh, gosh, I saw the biggest flock of horned larks today. It was so nice to see so many of them. I was driving down to our place, south of Indian Head, along about an 11-kilometer road there, and I must have seen 110, 120 of them along the road. It was
wow.
wonderful to see. It's the first bird back here in the spring where you go, wow, okay, spring is actually going to happen. And then the mountain bluebirds show up and people have been reporting them this week. So that's all.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, so I've been keeping my eye open for the first mountain bluebird. Haven't seen it yet, but the first robins have shown up here. So that's...
Have they? I haven't seen any yet, yeah. But I'll start looking.
And I guess the ferruginous hawks have arrived in the south, so that's exciting. A friend of mine, Lawrence Scott, was down in the southwest corner of the province and saw 30 or 40, he said, driving around.
That's cool.
Some on nests, some sitting on nest sites already, so good.
So, Trevor, let's just jump right into it. Really great to have you on. You're an award-winning and best-selling Canadian author who has written numerous books and radio documentaries focused on the plight of the Canadian prairies and grassland birds. Now, I'm admittedly, and I know I've mentioned this to you, I'm a big fan of your work. I absolutely love your 2008 book, Grass, Sky, Song, Promise and Peril in the World of Grassland Birds. Certainly would encourage everyone listening to read that book. It's on my short list of essential conservation reading. So why don't we start with, can you tell us what sparked your fascination for the prairies?
Well, like a lot of prairie kids, I grew up with a gun in my hand. My dad taking me out from the age of 12 with a single shotgun. We'd be walking around the edges of sloughs or through aspen bluffs and hunting. And I, you know, by the age of 20, 23, I think, or so, I'd finished university and moved away. Didn't have people to hunt with. But I just realized, you know, I wasn't that big on the killing part of this anyway. I was just, I liked to be out and looking at things and watching things with wings moving. And so, you know, eventually I stumbled into bird watching. It actually was through whale watching on the West Coast. We took a kayak trip and I realized coming home from that, although there weren't many whales on the prairie, there were lots of birds because we discovered birds on the whale watching trip. And so yeah, I just slowly picked it up in my 20s. And then pretty quick, if you're living in Regina where I was, within a year or two, you start to realize, talking to older naturalists, that the birds are declining, that the grassland birds especially are disappearing. And that was kind of what lit a fire under me and got me thinking about my other passion, which was for writing, to start to think about writing about birds and what's happening to them.
When did you write your first book about grassland birds?
It came out in 2008. But all my books have birds in them, and the wider conservation issues around prairie and how human beings, you know, through history have colonized and settled the prairie and how that's affected our relationship with nature here and cascaded into the decline of biodiversity. So, yeah, it happened in my mid-20s. I was writing books by the time I was in my mid-30s, and first one came out in 2000. And yeah, eight books later, here I am.
Yeah. So that kind of brings me into your latest novel is called The Economy of Sparrows. So it's a bit of a departure from your previous books, which have been nonfiction. This one, it follows the story of Nell, a woman who's moved back to the prairies after a long time away. And she takes readers into kind of her deep fascination with 19th century egg collectors, while also exploring some of the really weighty issues that are affecting grassland birds around her today. So I'd speculate that some of the issues that are covered in that book are really weighing heavily on your mind, a lot of grassland conservation stuff. So firstly, could you let listeners know what some of those top conservation issues are for grassland species?
With grassland bird decline, it's like a lot of biodiversity decline because it's related to habitat loss, right? And habitat loss, primarily around the planet, and especially here on the Great Plains, is related to agricultural practices and the economics that are pushing it along, you know, which are incredibly complicated and hard to get into in a discussion like this. But farmers are being pushed by the industry they're living in to cultivate more and more land all the time. We continue to lose native prairie in Saskatchewan, and we're even losing the non-native perennial grasslands that people used to use for grazing livestock as well as native prairie. It's disappearing because it's just the economics are better if you're growing canola or wheat. So that's basically what's driving the loss of species or the decline of species in the grassland region.
Birds and Beans uses 100% certified bird-friendly coffee beans, which means you can help protect and restore valuable habitat simply by drinking a coffee. Bird-friendly farms plant a variety of trees and vegetation, creating a fully functioning ecosystem. The creation of this diverse ecosystem goes a step further than shade-grown coffee. Now, you know we love them. Check out Birds and Beans. They will donate 10% of your purchase to bird conservation when you use the link in our episode description or head to birdsandbeans.ca/warblers.
Trevor, so I need to ask, what motivated you to explore these issues using a fictional story rather than continuing with the nonfiction?
Well, you know, having written 6 or 7 books in nonfiction and striking the same notes over and over again, I felt like I needed to try something new and find some new audiences, just engage new people. You know, for one thing, women tend to read more fiction than nonfiction. That's a generalization, but it's basically true. And I wanted to particularly address these issues with rural women of my generation and younger, who are seeing the world around them decline, and they're not happy about it. Sometimes they don't feel comfortable speaking out about it because maybe their relatives or their neighbors are involved in agriculture, and they too recognize that we can't just blame farmers. That's not going to work because we all eat at the other end of the table. But I just hear so much from women, especially, sometimes men, but usually women living in rural areas who will at least speak privately to me about the changes they're seeing in the landscape, the loss of wetlands, the loss of little bits of grassland habitat and of aspen bush forest and the aspen parkland especially. And they're unhappy about it and they don't know what to do. So I felt like I could create a character who they could identify with and a storyline that would work with them, that would resonate with their own lives and their own experience. But at the same time, you know, I'm always fascinated with the way we do science, with our historical processes in that, and, you know, things like bird collecting and egg collecting. I've come across in my research for other books, you know, following the stories of John and James McCown and other naturalists in the United States as well. That stuff really interests me. So I wanted to be able to combine those two things in one narrative, and felt like fiction would allow me to do that because it just gives you so much more latitude to be creative and to make stories stick together.
Totally. That makes sense. The egg collecting kind of fascinated me as well. When I first started to get into the piping plover work, I was reading historical accounts of where they'd been nesting in Ontario. And, you know, so many accounts are like, we collected 12 eggs. And I think, oh, come on.
Why did you
so
do that?
Endangered.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, so it is It is a fascinating little thing to delve into.
It's a sign that those people doing that were living in a time where we thought nature was so abundant we couldn't possibly, with our little collecting enterprise, have any real impact on it. It was naive to think that.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, egg collecting isn't the main thing that caused the decline of birds. It was other things. So,
no, it just,
in a sense,
it hurts
they
to
were
read
right.
About it, but it does
because some of those things, like piping plovers, are so rare now.
Yeah, absolutely. You touch on a lot of pretty big things in that book, The Economy of Sparrows. You know, Nell is dealing with a lot of anxieties, the eco anxiety, you know, how we do science. Shifting baselines is a really interesting thing in the conservation world these days. So could you tell us a little bit about why these topics were so important to convey in the story?
Well, you know, if you're an environmentalist and a birder of my generation, I'm 65 years old now, you've lived through a period where it seemed like, yeah, we were going to get on top of all kinds of environmental issues, so many things, but we've ultimately failed. And the science culture that naturalists depend upon, or environmentalists depend upon, has failed to really in any way act in solidarity with Indigenous people, for example, because I think these things are connected. The colonization of the West and the decline of nature is intimately connected with what happened to the clearing of the plains of its Indigenous people, or even failed to act in solidarity with the more than human world. You know, along with all of that, I think we failed to move our governments to take action on the existential crises of this time, climate change and biodiversity collapse. And you start to feel that all of this data collecting we do, the citizen science, the bird counts, eBird reports that I make, the water sampling that some people do, has done very little more than just track a decline that, sure, it graphs enough to depress us, but it doesn't seem to be enough to move our governments to action. And it gets to be heartbreaking. And this is where the anxiety and the grief come from for people living in a prairie region like this, where nature has been so entirely colonized and taken over by industry. Yeah, that's what inspires me to write anything.
Yeah, desperation seems like a strong word for it, but the feeling of desperation to try and get this message through to people, you know, if these heavy scientific graphs aren't working, what else can we try, right? And storytelling is one tool that we can try to reach new audiences, try to inspire. Like you said, you clearly wrote this character to connect with a lot of the women that live on the prairies and try and create a voice for them. So hopefully inspiring more people. There's a lot. There's a lot to deal with. The eco-anxiety is a real challenge these days.
Yeah. And I think stories are very powerful. The stories we tell about climate change right now, I think, are affecting the world. We hear so much doom and gloom about climate change that really there's no hope. And if we keep telling ourselves that prophecy will probably come true.
Yeah.
I think we need positive stories as well. And I tried to be, in a way, realistic, but also positive in this novel to show that we can make a difference in little ways, connecting with our neighbors around these issues and starting to raise awareness and talk about them and think about them. I don't know anything else what we can do other than to start telling the right stories to one another, to be encouraging, look for things that are working and continue to work on that and building the social connections that we're going to need to live through climate change and biodiversity collapse.
I think that's really interesting and I totally agree with that last point. And I think building those relationships are key. And I think, you know, and in some ways, and, you know, Andrew and I were chatting about this offline even before the interview about, you know, how we deal with in the conservation field, how we deal with eco anxiety and trying to find solutions. And I think, you know, conservation isn't just like a one trick pony, right? Like conservation can be achieved through a variety of different means. And in many cases, we need that multifaceted approach, right? Like we need the research, we need the data collection, because that informs, you know, potential policy action, that informs the conversations and the stories that we have. So there obviously is a lot of value there. But I definitely am with you about the power of storytelling and the power of building connections, you know, with neighbors, and something that happened in your novel and something that's happened to me in my own neighborhood, you know, building those relationships and showing people the power of birds is a great way to make change. And I liked that theme within the economy of sparrows for sure. I do want to just as a writer and as someone, Trevor, who's been writing for all your adult life, you know, what does a positive impact for birds mean to you as a writer? Like what is the end game you want to see with in terms of the influence of your writing?
Well, if I was to try and make such a thing as a mission statement for myself as a writer, I think my job is to try to awaken people up to the beauty and the diversity of where we live, of wherever you live, that even in a landscape that's been so heavily impacted by agriculture and industry, that there really are great places where nature is hanging on, where there still are birds singing, and they will be here in Saskatchewan very soon. The meadowlarks will be back. The bluebirds will be back. So I just think that's what I'm aiming to do with anything I write, is to just hold these things forward to people and invite them to go there, to sit outside and listen to nature, and to let it help them with their anxieties and fears about the world, and then get out there and connect with other people over these things and see what we can do together.
That's a common theme that comes up a lot throughout this podcast, is how much birds can help us, you know, help us feel really good. Just bird song is so powerful. So And they can teach us a lot, you know, as we're struggling with climate change and all of these big issues, just going out and spending time with birds is actually so, so valuable.
Absolutely. Yeah. I try to do it as much as I can, even in these winters where there's nothing but chickadees and nuthatches out my door.
Hey, now chickadees are pretty awesome. Let's be honest. Okay. So pivoting the conversation here a little bit, I'd love to know what some of your essential reads are that you could share with our listeners.
Well, in terms of books, if I start with bird books, my library is full of old bird books, especially. I've been collecting them for so long. Some of them have gotten old during my lifetime, but some of them are even predate that. One of my favorites is a really old book from the 60s published by the University of Toronto Press called Ours and the Birds by R.D. Simmons. It's all about prairie birds here in Saskatchewan, and it's just this intimate look at birds. Then books like Peter Matheson's The Wind Birds, just loved that. But any you know, in terms of new books, any book by Scott Wiedenthal is just wonderful. Donald Crudsman's The Singing Life of Birds. I love that book.
Love that book.
Yeah. People who write about the more than human world, though, you know, beyond birds, I read a lot in that kind of environmental philosophy and our relationship with nature stuff. And so I think of books like David Abrams' The Spell of the Sensuous or Barry Lopez's Arctic Dreams, Robin Wall Kimmerer, of course, Sweetgrass, Breeding Sweetgrass. And then I read a lot on agriculture and nature because that's where I live and it has the big effect on nature. So the Bible to me in that area is Wendell Berry's The Unsettling of America. You know, I go back and look at Aldo Leopold when I can. There's so many books that you could list.
There's just so many books and not enough time to read them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of so many books, do you have any new projects on the horizon, books or otherwise?
I've got lots of environmental projects I'm working on right now. We're trying to save a little patch that we discovered recently by the airport, a little patch of native grassland right in the city of Regina. And so we're trying to save that because somebody has proposed a golf driving range for a big piece of it. So we're working on that. The wetland issue here is so big. And I work with several little conservation organizations to try to raise awareness around that. Meanwhile, the government is talking about more irrigation out of Lake Diefenbaker, and that's going to be a problem for both grassland and for water in the province. There's always those environmental issues I'm working on. So, but then in between, I'm trying to squeeze in some writing. So if I get to write a piece for the Narwhal or, you know, some other publication, I'm happy. And I'm collecting ideas for a new nonfiction book, which is so right now so indeterminate. I hesitate to try to explain it because it'll be probably way different 3 years from now. Yeah.
What does that process look like? Do you just kind of you're just doing some big interviews, or how's that come together?
The way I start is just keeping notes, you know, little index cards. Some of them I write when I'm out on a walk, or I just things happen to me, you know, or I run into some person, I make a note about them. I got a big fat file and then some stuff in my computer. And I got at some point in the next year or so, I'm going to put it all out in a big room and look at it and then see if I can make it make sense. That's my usual process of trying to synthesize things that initially seem very remote from one another and disparate and make it into a coherent story.
I'm picturing like a movie detective with all of these different things pinned on the wall and some red yarn connecting the dots.
It's pretty well literally that. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. That's something kind of fun that we can all look forward to.
So I think before we wrap things up, Trevor, and I think we'll just remind listeners, we'll be sure to put a list of all of Trevor's recommended books in the show notes. So you don't have to, hopefully you weren't furiously writing all those down, some really great suggestions. But Trevor, I hope maybe you could share with us a favorite birding story or natural history moment you've had on the prairies. Because we have a lot of listeners that don't live out here and don't understand how incredibly magical the prairies can be.
Yeah, and Jody, even the ones who do live here don't see it because there's so little of it, or they don't know where to go. And there's no public access to most of the best places are now under private management. The story I'm going to tell you is about a community pasture that used to be federal land Now it's being managed privately by a group of grazers who are doing a good job looking after it, but really you don't have the same public access. Anyway, it was Broken Shell Community Pasture. It's only 45 minutes or an hour south of Regina. And what I remember is one time going down there to look for birds, and I just kind of stumbled off of the highway, you know, in my car driving along a road east of Highway 6 and came across this community pasture, Broken Shell it's called. And I pulled over at a spot that I didn't know which was a good spot to stop. I really just started trying to find grassland birds. This is a long time ago. And I just stepped over the barbed wire fence because I could hear birds were singing. And I sat down low in the grass, and it was just one of those perfect June mornings, you know, not too much wind, you could hear forever. And right away, there was this canopy of song over my head, filled with Sprague's pipits primarily, but also lark buntings. And then I could feel a sense that the longspurs were actually all around me in these little flights making circles. And I was just the center point that they were somehow ignoring because I was sitting so low. So they're beautiful. The music of the longspurs, the pipits above me, high, 200 meters overhead. And then I realized over the horizon to the north of me, a couple of pronghorn had come in grazing from that side and had settled down into the grass. And it was just magic. It just, you know, it printed inside of me somewhere, that memory, and I hold on to that.
I can picture that so well. You painted a really nice image.
Yeah, that's incredible. The music of the prairies is so much in the sky above you. You know, it's a very different experience, right?
Than
being in a forest, you know, or being in different habitats with all the birds doing aerial displays and flying around. It's really, if people haven't experienced it, you know, you need to. And I, since, you know, moving out here several years back, I always try to make a habit of trying to have those type of experiences. And the sad reality is it's getting harder and harder to find those, those places that you've articulated so beautifully in your story.
Yeah, they're there still. It's worth seeking them out. You know, finding some local bird watcher who knows how to find them and go along with them is the way to do it.
I think that's a really solid piece of advice. Again, just reaching out to your neighbors, right? The folks in your community.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be on our podcast, Trevor. It's been lovely to hear more about your writing process and some of these big thoughts that are making their way into your books. I'm sure our listeners will be keen to read some of the works you've put together.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks, Jody. I love the podcast. I tune in as much as I can.
Awesome.
Yeah, you and the ABA podcasts are on my list.
Well, that's lovely to hear. Could you let listeners know where they could get their hands on your latest novel, The Economy of Sparrows?
Yeah, The Economy of Sparrows is supposed to be in most bookstores across the country, and it's in a lot of libraries. Certainly here on the prairies, it's on pretty well every library. It's, you know, it's in Indigo Chapters, both the ebook and the paper version. And the audiobook came out a couple months ago, so it's available through the Kindle Store, Kobo, I think Google Play, and audiobooks.com as well. So lots of places you can find it.
I love that. I love that so much. Thank you again so much for joining the podcast. It's been great to pick your brain about grasslands.
Yeah, thank you so much, Trevor.
Thanks, Jody. Thanks, Andrea.
The Warblers is a podcast of Birds Canada. Our goal is to bring you the information you need to discover, enjoy, and protect birds. If you like what you hear, please subscribe, leave a review, and share this podcast with everyone you know. Birds Canada relies on the support of donors like you. Visit birdscanada.org/warblerspodcast to make a donation today. The Warblers is produced by Jody Allaire, Kate Dogleish, Chris Koo, and Andrea Gress, with music by Jose Mora and art by Alex Nickel. Until next time, keep birding.